Welcome to another episode of the Game Horizon podcast. This is episode 23. So how's everything, Anthony?
It's great, Alex. How about yourself?
Oh, man. You know, I'll tell you, like this whole, you know, July 4th weekend and stuff was pretty damn long. I don't know if you noticed, but I actually disappeared from like July 4th all the way up to like this past Sunday.
Yeah, July 4th was pretty crazy. We had a fire ban, so you guys got to have fireworks and whatnot.
Well, yeah, I guess I suppose so. But the fireworks that I saw were the ones that I've been seeing over the past few months or so, which is at Disneyland and stuff. I was actually there on July 4th hanging out with friends and stuff.
So, do they have fireworks like every night?
Yes.
Oh, shit. Okay.
Every single night.
Okay, so on 4th of July, do they go even crazier or no?
Yeah, they have themed fireworks, you know what I mean? So it's like, for 4th of July, obviously it's going to be all about patriotism and all that stuff, and the Wild West, and I don't know how the Wild West figured into that, but I guess it's the frontier and all that stuff. So, you know, it was kind of cool, but we did it kind of differently. For that particular day, No, it wasn't that day. I'm confusing that with Friday, because Friday I also went back to Disneyland. And actually, that Friday, this past Friday and stuff, when we're recording this, I actually rode Big Thunder Mountain Railroad, you know, the roller coaster in Frontierland, while the fireworks were happening. So we rode it, like, I think three times or something like that.
Yeah, that sounds awesome. Question about Disneyland real quick. I got a question for you.
Okay.
What's the biggest change in the last year, do you think?
Oh, man. Well, the biggest change really is the Matterhorn. Basically, they actually closed it down for like 6 months and stuff like that. And they had a full refurbishment. You know, they kind of smoothened down the track. They changed the cars and stuff. I think I talked about this in a previous episode, but that's something that we can cover like on another episode and stuff, because there's really been a lot of really big changes. And of course, there's also a question of whether or not you're talking about Disneyland Park or Disneyland Resort. Because if we're talking about the resort, there's been a ton of changes.
So. And not to Disneyland, right?
Not just Disneyland Park, yes. So it's been huge. Like everything is brand new again and stuff.
And so, Star Tours, huh?
Yeah, that was last year. So. But before we go on to, you know, our usual gaming topics and geek topics and whatnot, I actually wanted to tell you a story, because I completely forgot to tell you the story because, you know, I was all busy with all this different stuff. And of course, last month was my birthday month. Have I ever told you what my parents and my relatives gave me for my birthday?
No, you didn't. We've talked a lot, and you haven't mentioned... I like your story, so I want to hear this.
Okay. So, you know me. Like, I'm a pretty public guy. Like, anything that I do, I usually post it on Twitter. You know, if I go to Disneyland, I usually post, yeah, I'm going to Disneyland. Or, you know, if I'm watching a movie, it'll be like, yeah, I'm here, like, watching, like, you know, Batman or whatever, you know, movies there are. Of course, not yet, but I'm probably going to do that. But, so, you know... So for my birthday and stuff, like my parents said, my mom specifically, my mom's, you know, like my biological mom and stuff, and she's been remarried plenty of times. She basically said, well, why don't we have your birthday dinner with family and stuff? And this was actually done the day before my actual birthday, which was, I think, on a Thursday, May 31st, I want to say. So I'm like, all right, so let's do this. So went over to, you know, her place and stuff. We had like dinner, and like everybody is all tired because it's the middle of the week and whatnot. So, you know, they gave me, you know, envelopes and stuff. I'm like, oh, cool. These are going to be like awesome. Maybe it's going to be like a Best Buy card. Maybe it's going to be an Amazon card. Maybe it's going to be a GameStop card. Maybe it's going to be a card for Disneyland or something like that. You know, maybe it's Disney dollars, you know, so, you know,
Disney
I got
dollars.
Home. Yeah. So basically I got home, you know, I got all the presents and stuff like that. And so I slowly started opening them and I'm like, okay, these guys didn't really put any sort of effort into their gifts and stuff. Like, what the fuck is this? So the first gift that I had was basically like a gift card for Red Lobster and or Olive Garden. Now, what do you think about those two places?
I don't know.
You've never eaten it either?
What places again?
Red Lobster and Olive Garden.
Oh, we got those. You know what? That's what we have in Colorado. We actually have those. We believe it or not, we have those.
Right, but what's your opinion of those?
I like them both, although I do like Johnny Carino's better than Olive Garden.
I have no idea what that is. We don't have it here.
Okay, Johnny Carino's is another Italian restaurant chain.
Uh-huh.
And we have one of we actually have something you don't. okay, but it just serves better food than Olive Garden. So I would choose Red Lobster over Olive Garden.
Really?
Yes, sir.
Okay. I'm not going to say anything, you know, with your tastes and stuff like that, because obviously you have either less or some stuff that we have here, and we have more of a variety here and stuff. I mean, for crying out loud, Los Angeles just got a Chick-fil-A. I don't know if you guys even have that in Colorado.
We have a couple of them in Colorado Springs.
We have one.
Wait, what? Yeah. What the fuck?
It opened last year or something like that. But anyways.
Chick-fil-A.
Yeah, Chick-fil-A.
God damn.
Yeah. And when it was like popular and stuff, there was like a line around the block. Around the block.
Around the block. How do you like it?
I haven't eaten there yet. Well, okay. There's this thing about, you know, how the owners of Chick-fil-A hate the gays and stuff like that. So that's kind of a problem here in Los Angeles, because everybody loves everybody. So you basically say you hate some sort of group and stuff, your business is not going to be patronized. So that happened. So anyways, going back to my story, and I'm like, I'm a big, you know, foodie kind of guy. Like, I like stuff that I am familiar with. And, you know, like, I sometimes venture outside of my comfort zone and stuff. But one thing is for certain, I don't like either Red Lobster or Olive Garden.
Oh, fuck!
At all. In fact, when I got that card, like, I basically went out with my coworker on a Friday and stuff. So I'm like, hey, Rachel, you want to go out to eat and stuff? And she's like, oh, yeah, sure. I can treat you on your birthday and stuff, because she missed my party and stuff. So she's like, yeah, we'll go to lunch with you. So I told her, like, I had this $50 gift card for, like, either Red Lobster or Olive Garden. It just so happens that where I work in Thousand Oaks, there's a Red Lobster and a Olive Garden right next to each other. So we picked, like, Red Lobster. So we're like, all right, we'll go to the Red Lobster. So she ordered, like, clam chowder, and I ordered, like, chicken strips or something like that. Which, of course, is the most logical thing you order from Red Lobster, right? Chicken.
Chicken strips!
So I ate it, and I'm like, okay, this is not any better than the stuff that I ordered at IHOP. And I had a little kind of bowl of clam chowder from my friend, you know, from my friend's plate, because she ordered like a clam chowder plate and stuff like that. And it was probably the most non-creamiest, like, you know, New England clam chowder I've ever tasted in my entire fucking life. It was so diluted, it was so liquid that there's no cream in it. And I'm like, dude, you probably can get creamier crap from, like, Campbell's soup, like, that I can get from, like, Ralph's across the street. Yeah, I'm like, are you serious? And, you know, I didn't say anything and stuff, but I just paid. Sadly, though, like, I didn't use the card enough, so I still had balance in that. You know, I still have, I still have, like, maybe $25 left, so I can try my luck at, like, Olive Garden, but for crying out loud, which I'm like,
Olive Garden.
Yeah, I know. So as if that's, you know, that's as if it's adding insult to injury, I got another card, but this time it was for Macaroni Grill, which, I'm a big fan of Macaroni Grill. It's pretty fancy. You guys have it over there, right?
Yeah, we have one in Springs, Colorado Springs.
Yeah, and I hadn't eaten at, like, a Macaroni Grill for about 2 years. So I was like, okay, cool. I can finally have, like, an excuse to go back to Macaroni Grill. So in one of my birthdays, because I had, like, a birthday at, like, you know, at a nightclub, and I had another birthday, which is kind of a little low-key, bowling alley / arcade / karaoke. I think I told you about this.
Yeah.
So there was a Macaroni Grill nearby. So I'm like, all right, Chris, you know, my best friend Chris. All right, Chris, let's go, you know, have dinner before the party and stuff at the Macaroni Grill, you know, before everybody comes and stuff. So we went there, you know, I looked at the menu and stuff, totally, completely different menu. So of course I was, like, really excited. I'm like, yeah, this is going to be awesome. So, you know, I was deliberating between, like, this veal chop and this other chop type of entree and stuff, and, you know, I said, like, you know, I even asked the waitress, I'm like, so, you know, should I get the veal chop? And she was like, well, I would follow your first choice, you know, I've never had them. And I'm like, okay, so I guess I'll get the veal chop. And of course, you know, my friend Chris got whatever he decided to get. And so it finally arrived, and what really surprised me was that it was veal, and veal is, like, you know, lamb and stuff, but right. It was breaded. It was a pork chop, basically. But I didn't know that pork chops had a mandatory thing where everything needs to be frickin' breaded. Okay? So it was breaded, deep-fried lamb with like, oil dripping on the side of the plate. And I'm like, okay.
That's healthy.
Yeah, totally healthy. With, like, I don't know what it was, but it was, like, some sort of greenish side salad and stuff, which had, like, you know, balsamic vinegar with oil dripping on the side of it. I'm like, okay. And then I'm seeing a pattern here. And then, like, the pasta and stuff is all dripping with oil, too. And I'm like, wait a second. You don't dip, like, pasta in freaking oil? What is this? So I tried eating it, and I started getting really sick because it was just all grease and oil. Like, every time I bit into, like, the veal chop and stuff, it was just all oily. And I'm like, ah, oh, this is... Oh, and sad to say, I actually asked it to go, and I left it in my car and stuff when we went bowling and stuff like that. And sad to say, it's been... Like, I think that birthday party was about the 18th of June. I think the leftover, like... plastic crate or whatever the hell, like, plate that I still have it in, I think it's still sitting in my refrigerator.
That's lovely.
I know. And there's no mold, by the way, that's grown on it, so tells you how much preservative that thing has.
Jesus Christ.
I mean, holy crap. Like, you can probably build a freaking wax museum with whatever's left over from that crap.
It's a fucking mutant.
Yeah, exactly. So anyways, going back to this, so the last gift that I got was, again, adding insult to injury and stuff, which is a $25 gift certificate for Papa John's pizza.
That's not bad. I like Papa John's.
That's not bad, except I don't eat at Papa John's.
Ah.
I mean, okay, I have a pretty open, you know, Facebook account. I regularly order a Pizza Hut, and every time I order Pizza Hut, it actually posts on my Facebook account and actually, you know, shows people what I freaking order, okay? I also check into all the restaurants that I eat at just to make sure that people know where I eat, right? So how in the hell did my family miss all those, like, check-ins and those posts and stuff of me eating at those restaurants and checking in and getting me the wrong crap? In fact, actually, I think it was like about 2 or 3 weeks ago that I actually had dinner with my mom, and I complained to her about the quality of, like, the gift cards that I had. You know, told her, like, I'm pretty sure you got me the Macaroni Grill gift card, right? And she's like, yeah, I did. And then I proceeded to complain about, like, the Red Lobster and, you know, like, the Olive Garden things. And then she basically said, oh, I think that's the one that I gave you. And I kind of stopped dead in my tracks because I've been insulting, like, Olive Garden and Red Lobster for, like, the past half an hour driving to our dinner, right? And I'm like, and I just looked at her, like, you know, dumbfounded. I'm like, but you know I don't eat at Olive Garden or, you know, or Red Lobster. And I've already mentioned before while I was complaining that I check into every single restaurant that I eat at and stuff. And I was, like, pondering on how people could actually miss that. You know, the opportunity to actually get me a good gift, quote unquote. And she was like, but there's, like, another, you know, fancy, like, you know, restaurant that you could have picked. I'm like, what? The other one is, like, only available in the Midwest. And the other one is, like, Santa Monica, about 45 miles away from where I'm at. You want me to drive 45 miles for a freaking steak place that you know, is basically, I guess, comparable in quality with, like, Olive Garden and Red Lobster? That's kind of, you know, that's not really, like, a confident kind of choice there, you know what I mean?
Oh, shit.
So, you know, so she kind of kept quiet, and I kind of kept quiet, and, you know, now I'm, like, left with $25 credit on, like, my Red Lobster / Olive Garden thing, and I actually gave away my Papa John's $25, you know, freaking gift card to my friend who was just laughing his ass off when, like, he heard about the story. And I'm like, yeah, I don't know, man. I mean, next year I better freaking get, like, an Amazon gift card from them or a Ross gift card, because I'm going to get rid of all my clothes and stuff. But, you know, whatever. That's my sad story. Those are the gifts that I got for my birthday and stuff. Although I had one friend who basically gave me, like, a really cool Target gift card. I would have accepted that. I actually got something cool out of that. But when you're given food for, like, a gift card, you're stuck. There's nothing you can use that for.
I'm not as picky. But I will say this, though. I will say this. I got a Home Depot card once from my uncle years ago when I was about 19.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, you know, quit playing those damn video games and fucking go build
a table.
I just bought a bunch of batteries.
Really?
Yeah, I just bought tons of AA batteries.
For your, like, GBA or whatever the hell it was.
I don't even think I had a GBA.
Are you serious?
No, I just bought batteries.
Oh, jeez.
I don't even know for what, but I just bought tons of batteries.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I'm not too much of a food snob. I am a picky eater, though. But, you know, I'm not exactly poor. Like, I eat at Ruth's Chris, and I don't know if you guys have Ruth's Chris. It's pretty expensive steak. You know, it's like a slab of steak is like about $40-$50 or something.
My wife wants to go there. She's the connoisseur.
Yeah. It's not cheap, you know? Yeah. But you give me a card for, like, Olive Garden. Not to say that I'm kind of like, you know, I don't, what's the term? Like something with a gift horse and stuff, whatever. It's just weird because I've never gotten restaurant gift cards from my family ever. It's usually cash. Like, it's as if they were, like, hanging out around, like, the coupon rack while doing groceries at, like, Ralph's or something like that. And they said, oh, we should probably get Alex, like, a gift. Here we go. And I'm like, of all the things that was on that rack, there's, like, Disneyland coupons. There's, like, gift cards at Best Buy. The thing that they got was freaking food. I'm like, come on.
Well, between, like, you know this. My wife is a culinary major. I don't think I've ever said that on the podcast.
No.
She's studying to be a chef.
Right.
So, the last several years, her tastes have gotten more sophisticated. And mine haven't developed.
Oh, jeez.
So, we'll, like, go to a restaurant sometimes, like, this is good. And she'll be like, no, it's not. And I'm like...
Well, so, I think I'm kind of the same way, but I think it's just... I don't know. Like, when I was growing up, I don't know if I told you this, but when I was growing up, I actually had a very specific pattern when it came to my food. I would always eat the same kinds of food every single day for, like, breakfast and dinner and sometimes lunch and stuff, but mostly, like, breakfast and dinner. Like, you know, when I was attending, like, elementary school in the Philippines and stuff, in high school, I would always eat oatmeal in the morning before my school bus picked me up. And then in the evening, it was always kind of different, but it would always stay there for several months. Like, for example, like, there was this whole kind of set of months and stuff that where I was eating, like, bacon and rice. And that was it. That was my whole dinner.
Huh.
Yeah. And I'm still alive, by the way.
Well, you're obviously talking to me, so that's good. Otherwise, we wouldn't have this podcast.
I know. I'm, you know, quirky personality. What can I say? So, anyways, what's new with you? How is your, you know, July 4th and whatnot?
No fireworks allowed because...
Well, I know that. I mean, yeah. There was a fire in your freaking area. Which, by the way, when did they put it out?
They actually got it 100% contained. They announced that today, actually. So,
are you serious? They just contained it today?
Yeah. 100%.
Okay.
Well, there's a rule. They had it 98% contained, and they have to wait 24 hours to see if there's any smoke coming out. Well, they waited 36 just to be safe.
Okay.
And it's done. So.
Well, how like the majority of it, when was it contained? Was it contained at least before July 4th, or were they still fighting it?
They were still fighting on July 4th. I think it was maybe 70% at that time, 60, 50,
well, that's something. That's not bad. I mean, that's kind of a good majority contained.
When we recorded this last, I think, what was it, maybe 2 weeks ago?
Yeah, it was basically, it was two Sundays ago, yes.
Fire was pretty goddamn bad.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah. It had just, like, there was that Tuesday when the fire had started, they got it 5% contained, and then the wind picked up, and they called it the firestorm, and that's when... shit hit the fan.
Oh, jeez.
So.
That's crazy.
But it's over.
Yeah, now it's over. Ta-da! Actually, today is... we're recording this on July 11th. It's on Wednesday. Of course, you guys are going to be listening to this, like, well after, you know, the fire's already put out. But, you know, yay! Fire's gone.
Yay! Yeah. Fire gone. Yay.
Yeah. So, anyways, what else is new with you? Like, you know, family, whatnot. I mean, I told you, like, that sob story about my gift card. So, what's your turn?
I've just been helping my 6-year-old read and stuff like that. And he's been, as a reward, I've been letting him play, I don't know if you've heard of this, but it's a Flash game. I don't know how legal it is. It's called Super Mario Crossover.
That's probably not legal.
But they haven't taken any legal action. It got a lot of attention in the press the last couple years. mm-hmm. because there's been different versions.
Right.
And what it is it's Super Mario Brothers with tons of characters from the NES. So, like, you could play Super Mario Brothers with the Contra guys.
Oh, I see. I think I've heard of that.
Yeah.
Like, they have, like, Simon Belmont or Trevor or something like that on there, mm-hmm. too, and Mega Man.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, pretty much, and they have, my son is Link, loves Link. My son is a big Link fan.
And we're not talking about, like, Zelda 2 Link. We're talking about Zelda 1 Link, right?
Yeah, Zelda 1 Link.
Jesus.
My son is he is a big Zelda fan. He's six, mm-hmm. and he plays those games, yeah. and he loves them. He's a big Zelda, he loves Link. He's absolutely, it's Link this, Link that, want to be Link when I grow up, want to be Link for Halloween.
Now, does he know that Link is a guy?
Yeah.
Okay, because that's kind of confusing, because, you know, like, you know how sometimes young kids are voiced by girls, and sometimes if they don't do it right, they sound like little girls as opposed to little boys?
Yeah.
Yeah, so that's why I was kind of curious about that.
Well, Link doesn't really talk anyway, you know, so he just has,
Well, yeah, that's enough, though. That's enough to kind of give that impression that, wait, what is he? It's she.
He's played everything from you know, Wind Waker to Skyward Sword.
Wow.
You know, he can you know, he can't beat all of Ocarina of Time, but he's only 6 years old. He can beat Ganon at the end of Ocarina of Time. He figured out that battle without my help.
Wow, that's impressive.
Yeah, the first Ganon battle and the second one, and he did not ask me for help at all.
Did he get there by himself?
No. Okay. He got into my game.
Okay.
On Ocarina of Time of 3DS. So he can beat Ganon.
I mean, it's a pretty expansive world. It's actually, like, if I remember correctly, when I played the first Zelda game and stuff, it took me a long time to actually, like, go through all 9 dungeons and stuff and actually understand, like, what I had to do for each, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, those games take a long time.
Mm-hmm.
Because they're thinking games, I think. And I think they're not, you know, they're not just go in the dungeon and hack things. They're, you know, you really, the dungeons are puzzles. I sometimes think Zelda is a puzzle game to some degree. Mm-hmm. So
yeah, there's some sections of it that are like more puzzle like and stuff, and it's a lot of symbology and kind of you know, obstacle placement and stuff, and, you know, kind of highlighting that, you know, mm-hmm. it's a good kind of basic, you know, game to take a look at in terms of level design, because sometimes, you know, you'll see certain kind of cues, like they'll put a light like on an important item and stuff like that, or they'd place, you know, they'll use different ways to put emphasis on something, you know, in certain different ways. But, you know, the later Zeldas, though, I found, like, especially with Skyward Sword, that it was kind of less of that and more like, you know, let's see how much we can push, like, the Wii and stuff, which, you know, I mean, Skyward Sword, I mean, it's a great game and all that stuff, but I think that game was a little bit different than the previous games and stuff in some ways in terms of level design.
Yeah, it was I liked the level design in it, though. So I thought it was great personally. Yeah. It's an interesting Zelda game because it had, you know, some interesting mechanics put into it. So such as crafting weapons and things like that.
Yeah, that was pretty interesting. That was also kind of completely unexpected and stuff for, like, a Zelda game. But, hey, you know, at least they're thinking out of the box.
So
that's something that we can give them credit for, at least.
Exactly. So, yeah, he's a big Zelda fan.
Mm-hmm.
So that's that. Also opened another one of my board games. We played, what was it? I bought a bunch of board games back in February. Uh-huh. And a lot of them we haven't touched, so we've been playing lots of Mansions of Madness, and you know this.
Yes.
So we've played Merchants and Marauders, which is a game I think you'd like. My friend
Merchants
said
Merchants and Marauders?
Again? Yeah, Marauders.
Uh-huh.
And my friend says it reminds him of Sid Meier's Pirates.
Hmm.
So it's what I like about it is there's a lot of choice in it. The choice is just amazing. What it is you have a ship and you can play it. You can play legally. You can go be a merchant.
Okay.
Or you can be a pirate.
Hmm.
And as a pirate, you could attack other trade ships or other players and all that stuff. Or you can, be a merchant and go legitimate. And what's cool is, like, certain islands will have high demand items. So, for example, you could go to one port, buy spices. Mm-hmm. And another port needs spices, so you sell them for double the money to upgrade your... And you actually upgrade your ship. You could buy upgrades for it.
And so then, you can, like, graft, like, cannons on your merchant ship and stuff like that, too?
Yeah, you could buy grappling hooks and upgrades, and then you can even buy a bigger ship.
Huh.
It's a really cool game.
Okay.
And it has one mechanical problem, though.
What?
Turns take a long time.
Ow. Yeah. I don't know about that.
That's the only thing. We move pretty quickly, but I've heard, you know, we're pretty quick-thinking guys, so it was pretty quick for us.
Yeah.
But I noticed how it could be for other people, though.
Yeah.
But for my group, it's a quick group. But that's the only problem with the game.
That's kind of, like, reminds me of when I was in college and stuff, and my friend, like, introduced everybody to, like, Risk. Holy crap, that round lasted till, like, 6 o'clock in the morning the following day. Holy shit.
Risk. Yeah, yeah, Risk is a long fucking game. I have Metal Gear Solid Risk. Did you know that?
Yes, I do know that.
Yeah, Metal Gear Solid Risk. We got to play that.
Mm-hmm. Which, by the way, I don't know if you saw this, but Kojima announced that there's finally trophy support for Metal Gear Solid 4.
Yeah, I thought that was hilarious today. I was like, I think I retweeted or I said something. What did I say?
Four years later, trophy support.
4 years later, we finally got trophy support. Yay!
I mean, no kidding, right? Like, yeah. I mean, okay, I understand that it's like Metal Gear's 25th anniversary, but why would you hold back, like, you know, the trophy, like, support for a game that was like 4 years old, which, by the way, the loading times on that thing doesn't improve over time, you know? It just gets worse with all the other games that are being released during this time period. It's not exactly a short loading time. It actually has to install a huge chunk of the game onto the hard drive, then you can play the chapter.
And you can watch Snake smoke.
Yeah.
Yeah, for what, like 5 minutes?
Was it really 5 minutes, though, in the install time?
Yeah. Well, no, and I think the first one was about 8 minutes, the first time you install it. And then, and then what sucks about it is the game is divided up in acts.
Mm-hmm.
So when you know, you load up act one...
There's like five acts to that, too.
Yeah, when you load up, say you have a save game you want to replay Act 1, but you're on Act 3, you have to wait for Act 1 to reinstall.
Oh, jeez. Terrible.
It's a great game, but it's
No, I love it, but, you know, Metal Gear Solid 3 has a special place in my heart.
Oh, Metal Gear Solid 3 is the best one.
Yeah, I was actually, like, on Twitter today, and somebody was saying that, you know, somebody couldn't get why Metal Gear Solid 3 was such a... you know, like, an improvement or such a better game than, like, Metal Gear Solid 4, and he got, like, flamed for it. I kind of feel sorry for the guy, but, you know, this is a guy who is, like, very critical of gaming anyway. He's Peter Skerritt and stuff. He's actually, like a press dude and stuff, but, you know, after that, like, I actually saw his tweets and stuff saying, like, wow, I guess I shouldn't have, like, expressed my opinion on the internet and stuff. I'm like, well, if you can't back it up, then you can't, then why say that you hate the game, you know? Like, for me and stuff, like, when we talk about video games here on the podcast, I basically tell you why I don't like the game and what the circumstances are.
Yep.
It's not exactly illogical to not like a game and stuff, but, you know, you're just gonna piss off, like, a certain segment of people. That's unavoidable.
Oh.
But if you're gonna start caring for every single gamer in the world, well, I'm sorry, then, you know, like, why are you reviewing games or writing about them and stuff?
Hey, I have no problem with that, as you know. I do it on a daily basis.
You purposefully do that on Twitter.
Well, sometimes real quick. Last week, all I said was, you know, they announced that Marvel superhero origins shit, you know?
Something like that.
Yeah. And all I said was, Capcom, go visit Wizards of the Coast to get the Dungeons & Dragons license.
Right, right.
A lot of our mutual friends were like, yeah, you know, that's a good idea. Yay, yeah. And all that.
Absolutely.
This one guy who always argues whenever I have wishful... He argues with me over wishful thinking.
Okay.
He argued me over this game, you know, me wishing this game, it'll never happen, you're wrong, you don't know what you're talking about. I'm like, shut the fuck up, man.
No, so, geez.
you know,
that's kind of weird. Like, those people and stuff, I don't get it. It's kind of like you're blue-skying and stuff, and you're just kind of, like, spitting out ideas, and they shoot you down. And I'm like, yeah, it's like, come on, like, I'm just kind of talking out of my ass, literally, and stuff, and you're taking that seriously? I mean, hello, welcome to the internet.
Cool story, bro.
Cool story, bro.
So,
awesome. So, okay, so you know what we're talking about today, right? Of course.
Yes, sir.
So, okay, so let me run down what we're going to be talking about today in this awesome episode of the Game Horizon podcast, which, by the way, we didn't get a lot of emails this week. I think people forget that we're still on the air. So just to clarify, and just so that people will know, our email address is partychat@gamerhorizon.com, and we are still answering your emails. We have one very interesting email that we will read later in party chat, but for the other stuff we're going to talk about, we have a pretty exciting one. You're going to be reviewing Walking Dead Episode 2, spoiler-free, right?
Yes, spoiler-free.
Yes, and you're going to try your best not to spoil us.
Yep.
And then the next thing we're going to talk about is the Ouya Android console, which, by the way, dude, it's like, I think it was like up to 20,000 backers as of right now, and basically crossed $3 million in terms of Kickstarter backing. So we'll be talking about that. The next one is something that you will want to talk about a lot of, which is the fact that Tales of Xillia and its sequel is actually confirmed for U.S. release.
Yay!
Yes, and we're going to talk a little bit about EVO 2012, which happened this past weekend,
and
which
I
is always
out.
Fun. Yeah, we'll talk about that later. And lastly, as you know, like, I actually asked people on Twitter and stuff if, you know, how they feel if we actually had like a dedicated geek segment, you know, because we're talking about a lot about games like this week. And so I figured it'd be nice to actually spend time on martial arts films as our geek segment, as our very first main geek segment. What do you think about that?
I'm down with that.
So, all right. Sounds cool. So right now, let's get into our very first segment, which is their Walking Dead Episode 2 review. So tell us a little bit about that.
So, spoiler free, huh, Alex?
Yeah, good luck.
Okay, Episode 2. The first episode came out, what, late April, I think?
I honestly don't remember, but it was a really good game.
And it surprised a lot of people, because Telltale kind of, and you know more about this than me, kind of has a mixed record.
Mm-hmm.
But this game surprised everybody.
Yes.
The first episode. So, does episode 2, you know, live up to the expectations? Is it great? Mm-hmm. I think it's vastly superior over episode 1.
Really?
I do. It's crazier, it's a lot more disturbing. It's insane.
How can it be a lot more disturbing than the first game? I mean, I know it's going to be difficult to explain it, but how?
Oh, fuck, Alex. God damn it. Oh, fuck. Fuck spoiler free. Okay, it has the themes of the Texas Chainsaw Massacre.
Oh, wow, really?
Yes.
Okay.
So we'll leave it at that. Is that spoiler free enough?
Sure. I mean, you know, it gives. Yeah. I mean, yeah. Why not?
Okay. So the one thing that I will say is for those that don't know, the game it's kind of a weird hybrid of a quick time events, adventure game, and like Mass Effect type decisions.
Right. And dialogue trees and all that stuff.
Yeah. I will say too that this game shows without a shadow of a doubt that your decisions will be reflected in every episode.
So that's what I was going to ask you too, is how much of the decisions that you've made in the first episode, like how does that kind of coalesce with the rest of episode 2? Is it like pretty apparent? Is it just the game kind of doing a wink, wink, nudge, nudge, saying, hey, you made that decision in the first game, right? I mean, not exactly that, but you know what I mean?
No. It's not a wink, nudge. It's very apparent.
Okay.
You know, there's a certain decision at the end of episode 1 that's heavily reflected. You probably know which one I'm talking about.
Yeah.
That's heavily reflected. There's a sequence in episode 1 that, depending on certain sequences, it involves a child. Do you know which one I'm talking about?
Yes, yes, yes.
Okay. Depending on your choices, certain people will not let you live that down in episode 2. They will constantly bring it up.
Okay.
A lot of your decisions show how people trust you, how they don't trust you. It's amazing.
Mm-hmm.
And they really did a good job of carrying it over.
Okay.
In fact, I think they probably did a better job than, say, Mass Effect 2, but that might be unfair because, you know, Mass Effect 2 is a completely big game, and you know what I mean, what
I'm trying to say. It's a larger scope. This one is, is this just as long as the first game, or?
It's just as long. I will say, though, the end, the second half of that, of the episode is fucking intense.
Really?
And horrifying. It is. This is probably one of the most scariest games I played in a long time. Episode 2. It gets fucked up, and that ending sequence, that end sequence is fed. You know how I rate games on end sequence? I don't just go by ending, final boss, or whatever.
Sure.
The final third of the game is, it is so fucking intense. It's just, you need to play this as soon as you can, Alex.
Well, okay, I know, but describe, it's just, I need you to describe it for all the people who haven't played it.
Well, I can't, that's the thing. It's, there's a lot of hard choices you have to make.
A lot of harder choices?
I mean, harder choices.
The stuff in the first game was, you know, I mean, for the exception of, like, the one, you know, at the end of episode one and stuff, it was pretty much a cakewalk as far as, like, some of the choices. Some of it.
Some of it.
Mm-hmm.
In this one, I think the choices are a lot more difficult.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a choice at the end of the game where it's not... It's not... It's more subtle.
Mm-hmm.
But it's more of a moral type of thing that you got going on, like more of a conscious thing, as opposed to, you know, the choice at the end of episode one where you chose, you know, to save people's life. This is very difficult to do. I'm sorry. Mm-hmm. The choice at the end of the game is like, you know, do I do it for, you know, do I do it for survival, or do I do it to be, you know, a humanist kind of thing?
Right.
And it's not anything like, you know, you have to save this person's life or not, but it's an interesting way to end it.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a, and it's just, it's still a hard choice because you're like, fuck, you know, do I help my fellow man or do I help myself?
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of like that battle between self and selflessness, kind of selfless, mm-hmm. and the self. So I like that more subtle ending,
mm-hmm.
as opposed to the obvious, you know, who you're going to save.
Mm-hmm.
Type of thing. And that was a great way to close the game. Plus, there's a plot twist that's pretty interesting. So.
Huh. Okay. Well, I mean, you know, it wouldn't be a Walking Dead episode if there's no plot twists and stuff like that. Because there's always, like, those... Especially since it, you know, the episodic format just lends itself to cliffhangers, like, a lot. Especially if you have to wait for it for about a couple of months until the next one's released. You know what I mean?
Yeah. So, August is, I think, the third episode. God damn it.
When... I will see, you know, when I see it in the marketplace, I will believe it. Because last time they're like, oh, we'll release it, you know, once every month. You know, it's like 2 months later. We're like, what? You know, it's like, we finally got it. Yay, I guess. You know, I Telltale isn't that good when it comes to maintaining schedules. So we'll see.
Yeah, luckily I've got a season pass, so.
Well, yeah, I think we all do. So, as far as the gameplay goes, do you see them, do you notice kind of like any sort of difference in complexity when, you know, it came to like some of the gameplay sequences? I mean, there were some mild gameplay sequences in the first game where you were, you know, you're like kind of in first person and you're basically your pointer, your kind of cursor and stuff becomes kind of like a target reticle where you can kill somebody and stuff like that. Do they have a lot more sequences like that, more frenetic sequences and more kind of like, you know, because like there's some sequences in the first episode where you're just kind of stationary and stuff and you kind of just, you know, point at somebody and then shoot, you know.
Right. The pacing in this one seemed, the pacing in the first game, as much as I love the first one, it seemed kind of scattered, you know.
Okay.
In episode two it seems more coherent.
Okay.
And as far as frenetic experiences, there are some very interesting ones.
Okay.
There's one in particular that I would love to talk about, but it's very spoilerish. but it is such, and it made me sick.
Wow.
It kind of made me disgusted, but I was like, you know, just it's cool. There's one that I'll mildly talk about real quick.
Okay.
There's one where you're getting you're getting attacked by an enemy, and to use cover, you have to push a tractor. Okay. Or a vehicle of some sort. So there's a lot more of those sequences. And the last half of the game, mm-hmm. the second half of the game, the climax of it is a lot more chaotic, like I told you, and more intense than the first episode.
Uh-huh.
Because, you know, it's not predictable like the first episode was.
Mm-hmm.
But it's just, you know, it's just how do you approach this? What decisions do I make? And it's like action-y. It's very action-y, to say the least.
Okay.
So it's pretty interesting. There's even a sequence where you get to choose weapons.
And
so
there's still a lot of character development in this, right? Because, I mean, that's one of the things that I really liked about the first game is they really kind of, it felt like a pilot of a TV show, and they really introduced everybody and stuff like that.
Yeah, it is like a pilot. It's like sometimes you watch a pilot that's very rough,
mm-hmm.
but several episodes later, it's so much better, and this is the case of it.
Mm-hmm.
And yes, all the character development is still there.
Okay, that's good.
You know, yeah. A lot of it focuses on, too, is a lot of character relationships.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, that's determined by you.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, that's the great part. There's a lot of quiet sequences in the beginning half of the game as opposed to the second half.
Okay.
So there you go.
Yeah, that's cool. I mean, you know, I obviously have it downloaded on my PS3 and stuff and just waiting to be played. So, you know, who knows? I'll probably play it, like, after this. So, but in any case, do you have, like, a rating for this game? Do you want to review this right now? Score it and all that stuff?
Like episode one, I will give it 5 out of 5.
And this is due to?
Due to it just... It's probably one of the best horror games in a long time.
Wow.
Let's be honest here. Mm-hmm. Horror games, you know, I love Dead Space, don't get me wrong. I love Resident Evil, but they're not exactly what they used to be.
Mm-hmm.
And this just has that feeling of, you know, just that sort of slow tension building up and then just kind of exploding.
Right.
And it felt like episode one did that subtly and episode two does it even more subtly and then just explodes towards the end.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just amazing. So 5 out of 5.
Awesome. That was probably one of the quickest reviews we've ever had for a game.
Well, it's not a very long game, so...
It's true, and we can't really talk about a lot of stuff, so... All right. So the next thing I want to talk about was actually about this Kickstarter that I found, I think it was like either 2 or 3 days ago. I don't really remember. This past Monday, basically, where this LA-based company actually wanted to make a open source console based out of the Android platform and stuff. And, you know, as of right now, it's sitting at about... $3 million worth of cash. Well, not cash, but, you know, money and stuff from Kickstarter, which is pretty damn amazing. So, Anthony, have you ever heard about this thing? And if so, what are your thoughts on this?
It's interesting. It's supposed to focus on more, like, indie games, right? And more smaller... As opposed, you know, smaller, more... You know, kind of your typical iPhone-style games, right?
Well, I don't want to say, like, iPhone-style games, because I've been kind of called out on that. I think what they're trying to do, though, is they're trying to kind of attract, you know, like, people like Team Meat, for example, to make, like, games like Super Meat Boy on their platform and stuff. Because I think there's a general kind of consensus with the indie game community that's just not happy with how console developers, or rather, console owners and stuff, are actually handling the gating of their platforms. And what I mean by gating is that every single platform out there, meaning the PS3, the Vita, the PSP, the 3DS, and all these consoles, they all have a gate that you have to cross in order for you to actually release a game on their platform. Not only that, you have to pay quite a bit of money in order to get into what we call, or what they call, a certification process, which is them basically trying to check if there's bugs on the game and stuff, and then, you know, once that's done, then they can release it on their platform. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I see what you're saying. So yeah. Just something easier for them to break into then.
Basically. And what's appealing to, you know, to a lot of gamers about this system is that it's $99. It is running on, I think, Ice Cream Sandwich, which is, I want to say it's Android 4.0. It actually is running mobile type hardware, like the NVIDIA Tegra 3 and stuff, which, by the way, it actually outputs at 1080p. So it's not a weak hardware platform by any means. But it's curious to see that the choice that they've picked when it comes to, like, the actual hardware that the system is going to have. You know what I mean? It's like 1 gig of RAM and about, I want to say, either 4 or 8 gigs of internal memory. I forget. But bottom line is, it's promising. And to me, like, when I saw this, you know, I couldn't help but be skeptical about it, because there's been a lot of other platforms that have come out, you know, like, and kind of said, like, well, we're going to try to change the industry kind of thing. Like, the Phantom came, you know, like, was, remember that system and stuff, the Phantom?
Barely.
You know, which basically became Vaporware. They have, like, a software demo of this, so it's not going to be like that. But the final hardware configuration isn't really final yet. Like, the industrial design hasn't been is not final, I don't think. And of course, we also have the $99 OnLive system, which I don't know how popular that is and stuff, but, you know what I mean, it's kind of just a little bit forgotten, you know. So my question is, you know, is there a market for this? I mean, we all have Xbox 360s and PS3s and Wii U's and stuff once it comes out. I mean, who is this really targeting? That's kind of my question.
That's a good question, because, can I be honest with you, Mr. Alex?
Sure.
I don't know, because let's look at it this way. I do know, and it's been announced, that one of the possible launch titles would be a game that I like, Saturday Morning RPG, for example, right?
Mm-hmm.
I love that game, and I have praised it for months. But the problem is that that seems more like an iPhone, more of a phone game, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not insulting it by any means. It has a deep system and stuff. It doesn't seem like something I would sit down to play on my console. And that's where we're getting into the. This is what I'm questioning about the system. Do Android games or iPhone games or whatever, do they translate well to consoles? And it seems like that's what it's going for. Now, you brought up the point with, like, Team Meat, right?
Mm-hmm.
And all that. And that's great that if they can get their games on that console.
Mm-hmm.
But again, you know, who is going to buy a console for those type of games is the question. And I'm not insulting those games. I'm just saying, would you just buy a console for just those type of games? Because when you buy a console, even people who play Call of Duty, they do dedicate a lot of time into those. And those games are actually very quick plays.
Yeah, and there's a value proposition that's kind of, you know, to be presented with a platform, with any sort of platform and stuff. And I was talking to this, you know, with somebody on Facebook and stuff, that, you know, as of right now, the promise of games is limited to the kind of Android games that are going to be supported on this platform. I mean, I saw Cannibalt in this, you know, kind of like the mock-up interface that they had, you know, kind of looks like a cross between Xbox Live Marketplace and Wii. And, you know, that's kind of cool. I mean, interface design is great. I mean, I can do that on Photoshop and stuff. But the thing is, like, and I kind of saw, like, a little bit that there was Madden there and stuff, which, you know, if that was actually true, that would be really cool and stuff. But I think that what I want to see from this platform is just a lot of exclusive titles that, you know, like, that's what the promise of the console is. You know, like, the fact that, you know, there's not going to be a lot of, I mean, I don't know any details about the certification process, if it is going to have any and stuff. I mean, the only thing that they said was it's going to be a hackable console, which, you know, it sounds promising on paper and stuff, but it's like, you know, like, a hackable thing. That's more like a geek type kind of, you know, activity and stuff. Like, I don't want to spend hours, like, personally, like, I don't want to spend hours and hours, like, hacking on my platform and stuff. I can leave that for somebody else to do. And, you know, what does that mean for piracy as well? You know, if it's a hackable platform, how is security kind of funneled into this issue? And I think that one of the more important things that I wanted to kind of address too, and it's something that I actually asked some of the people on the Game Horizon Twitter account, is what do people feel about choice? Because one of the things that this console promises is choice, right?
Right.
You know, and what do you think about that? Like, what do you think about the potential to have all these, like, really, like, you know, all these games on this platform and stuff. Like, what do you think about that?
That's tricky. We're in that kind of gray area where there's still a lot of, you know, uncertainties, you know, and
it's the promise of something cool, but without anything really tangible other than an industrial design, like a mock-up of an industrial design and an interface.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's, you know, I could see with just some of the titles that you mentioned and stuff like Saturday Morning RPG, I could see it being a lot of throwbacks, you know, okay. A lot of retro throwback games. Now, what does that mean? My question is choice has to go into how powerful the console is, because you said possibly a Madden, or there's a rumor of a Madden.
Well, I saw on one of the mock-ups that they had that was running on that video that they had a Madden or something resembling Madden, like on a logo on one of the icons and stuff. Let's call it that, because I don't know what they are. So
okay, like I said, how you know this thing? I'm not sure you know about how power. You talked about some schematics earlier,
mm-hmm.
but I'm just questioning it, how powerful it's going to be, and is it? Again, you know, choice, is that really going to penetrate the market? Because we live in a market that is so dependent on, you know, multiplayer and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of the indie games are against that. And as popular as they are, let's be honest, you know, as popular as, say, your Braid is or anything like that is, will it really, you know, appeal people to buy it? Because if you can't play a Call of Duty, will people buy it? That's the question.
Well, to me, let me read like a reaction by one of our fans and listeners and stuff. Virus60 basically says, well, I think that choice usually implies competition, which is good. Well, competition in theory promotes ingenuity and originality. So his kind of approach here, and, you know, correct me if I'm wrong here, Virus, is that the more choice that we have and platforms that we can pick, the more that we can kind of force, you know, kind of creativity and innovation in the other platforms. And this could be potentially kind of like a Trojan horse that just kind of sneaks in and basically takes everybody else's money. Now, yes, you do have a point that, you know, there, if it needs a AAA title or like kind of like a showcase piece that would show off the platforms, you know, as a viable, you know, hardware that you want on your system and stuff. And I don't think we've seen that yet. And what's interesting too, in that one of the things that they didn't talk about, and this is something that I was concerned about, is content curation. Okay. And we talked about that earlier. And content curation is basically them trying to figure out what you like, what games you like, and what you want based off of the games that you have and what the games you played, the duration of how long you played them, and, you know, just kind of basing it off of that. Now, one of the things that happening right now, especially in the mobile space, and I don't want to compare it to the mobile space because it's also a problem on Xbox Live and, you know, PlayStation Network and the Wii and the 3DS might as well, is that they have no good way of telling you and kind of suggesting you games that you might like. Like, let's say, for the sake of argument, you know, maybe 50 games came out on, you know, the Ouya and stuff. And, you know, that's great. You know, that means there's a lot of people making them. But how can you figure out which ones are the good ones and which ones you'll like? Because right now, and I'm speaking from an iPhone perspective, I don't know which games are good. They have an app of the week kind of thing that's happening and stuff, but I can't really, you know, it's been a hit or miss for me. Like, they would showcase puzzle games at one time, they would showcase action games, and they would show games that I won't even have any interest in and stuff. And that's disappointing to me, because there are some games that are just not targeted towards me. And I'm going to quote Sabari, one of our listeners and stuff, what he said. And he said, well, I've said it and recently heard Adam Sessler say it. The company who figures out how to curate their content wins.
Yes. So, I've seen attempts at, like you have, like, you know, if you go on Xbox Live or PSN, you can see, you know, user ratings or and stuff like that. But that doesn't really help.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think, because if I see a 5-star for a game, but no information as to why it's a 5-star game, how can I tell that's going to be a game for me? You know,
or if basically they say it's a great game, you should buy it. It's addicting.
Yeah, exactly. It seems half-assed and lazy.
Mm-hmm. So, it's just as useful as user reviews on other websites that only have maybe a sentence or two. I think the closest and most robust reviewing service that I've ever seen online on any website is actually Amazon's, because people actually write huge paragraphs on their, you know, products and stuff. And of course, people actually rate it up or down whether or not that was helpful to them or not, which is actually very useful. But we don't really, I mean, yeah, iTunes has that, but for the most part, it just lets you kind of rate it, a 0 up to a 5-star or something, which is barely helpful. You know, let me read another reaction here by Bohemian Moose 69. He says, I usually rely on my own personal taste when choosing a game. If a game interests me, I will most likely buy it. But remember, Bohemian Moose, what if there are 50 of the games you wanted to buy? Which one would you buy first? Now, here's the thing that we haven't addressed yet. We don't know how much the games will cost. There's just so many kind of unknowns with this platform that it's kind of frustrating to even talk about it.
And you know what? Can I bring up something that just was announced, I believe, was today?
Mm-hmm.
I'm not going to say it's going to happen to you, but this is interesting.
Ooh, yeah.
Whatever. we got Angry Birds Trilogy was announced
mm-hmm.
today for, what was it, Xbox 360, PSN, stuff like that.
Sure.
$40.
Mm-hmm.
$40 for the exact same games, and I'm not gonna put my personal bias on this. I'm just gonna say, you know, if you like Angry Birds, you'd best off paying $3 for the trilogy on mm-hmm. iPhone or Android or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
So if they're gonna upgrade the price of that game
mm-hmm.
for the consoles, will they do that with the Ouya? And this is not the first time they did that. Remember, you know, another good example is Dungeon Hunter, which, you know, they brought for about the same price on PSN for PS3, but they made it $40 on the Vita.
Mm-hmm.
So my question is, are they going to take that step? Are they, you know, are you going to be able to, you know, have a game that's $1 and then they'll charge you $40 for it? And that's a valid point,
mm-hmm.
I think.
And let me take the stage here and kind of blue sky here, and by blue skying I mean I want to kind of just shoot the shit out of my ass and kind of, you know, get ideas out.
That's a lovely image, but go ahead.
Okay, so I'm thinking what Ouya is gonna do is they're gonna do a kind of like an iTunes or Android model. Now I don't know how Google does it, but how Apple does it is they take, I want to say, 30% of the actual price of the game, and they pocket it. And then 70% goes to the actual developers themselves directly.
Okay.
So I'm thinking they're going to do that. Now, again, that's just me trying to figure out what would be the most logical. Because I don't think the way that they have the system set up is that they basically said, well, these are what's inside of this thing. You can hack the hell out of it. You can install apps on it however you want, as long as it's an Android app and all that stuff. And, you know, they're promising a lot of stuff with this platform. But it kind of makes you question a lot of things with the platform. And I don't want to be pessimistic about it. But I want to be optimistic by saying that I'm hoping that, you know, a lot of indie developers are actually really looking at this platform seriously and just not, you know, let it die by the wayside and stuff. I mean, obviously, there's 20,000 people that have supported it, and there's about $3 million, dollars worth of stuff that they can invest back into the platform. And I seriously hope that either they invest that back into the technology or, you know, something useful, and maybe research on, you know, on content curation and all that stuff, because I do want this to succeed. I think, you know, a lot of us, you know, including the console manufacturers, can learn something about this project and stuff. And, you know, I really want to see this thing fly.
And before
I hand this off to you, I want to be proven wrong. I want all my pessimism to be completely destroyed when this comes out. Because I want this platform on day one, and I want to be proven completely wrong by it.
I want to check this out, because what I think this platform is also going to do is, I don't think it's going to, and someone asked me this today too. They asked me on my YouTube account, was, is this going to compete with the actual consoles, like the Xbox 360 and stuff? I don't think so. I don't think that's the point of it. I think it's just kind of another venue, and I think they're going a different direction. I don't think it's, again, it's not going to compete with, you know, the PS3 or their successors or anything like that.
Well, you know what's funny is, remember about 2 years ago when OnLive was actually unveiled and people thought that that was the end of console gaming and stuff like that? And of course, nothing really came out of that except, you know, like they released like a $99 dongle that you hook up on your TV. And of course, the service is still there, but there's not a lot of confidence of using it. You know, there's a lot of hype by journalists and stuff like that. I don't think that it's targeting the Call of Duty people. That's not the point. It's targeting mostly developers. And I'm not sure whether that's necessarily good in a way, because you also have to kind of target interested buyers. Because, you know, as cool as it is to say, yeah, we have about 20,000 people, that's basically an installed base, you know, it's about 20,000 people. That's about... it's a pretty small number compared to what the big platforms have. And of course, you know, you also have to take into account PC gaming as well, because Steam is, you know, from what I've heard, is not that strict compared to, you know, console platform holders. You know what I mean?
Right.
So you also have to think about that, you know, in like that kind of landscape. You know, like, is it really in competition with just the console developers, or is it also in competition with the PC platform holders, meaning Origin and Steam and good old games, you know what I mean? Because those are other delivery platforms and stuff.
This is probably going to be one of the most interesting stories of the year, gaming-wise, to follow.
And it is coming out, like, March of next year. So I wouldn't say that I'm not going to get it at all. I'm interested in what it can do and what kind of promises that they can actually uphold and stuff by the time March rolls around. And I'll probably invest is the wrong word for Kickstarters. I'll probably plunk down some money for it, you know, just to kind of support it and stuff. I mean, you know, it's not a lot of money, but I want to see more from them, and I want to see a lot more of what they're going to do within the next, you know, few months or so leading up to the release, because it almost seems a little too fast for it to be coming out like in March 2013, you know what I mean? Because they still have to make the boxes and, you know, do production and the, you know, and they have like all these other things like preparing for the launch party, which is kind of weird to be put on the Kickstarter, but you know.
Yeah, so, yeah. It's going to be interesting.
Yeah, either way, it will be interesting. So, but that's all we can talk about really for the Ouya and stuff. And we want to congratulate the guys who did build the Ouya and stuff for actually even making it. Because, you know, without you guys, we wouldn't be talking about this. And I think, personally, I think this is more of a disruption of the console industry and what Nintendo is doing with the Wii U. Just my opinion.
Oh, shit. You heard it first.
Yep.
Those are fighting words.
Well, shit. Unless Nintendo releases their Wii U for like $100, I don't think they can make a dent on the Ouya.
Oh, burn. Okay.
Anyways, so let's move on to the next topic, which I think you'll really like, because it's obviously something that you want to talk about and you're really giddy about, which is that, and I told you this was going to happen, that Tales of Xillia is actually arriving to the US. But not just that, but it's sequel as well. So do you want to talk about this a little bit?
Yes, you told me it was going to happen, but now that it's official, I feel much better with myself. So so being a Tales fan, I've been a Tales fan, and I probably said this when I reviewed Tales of Graces. I've been a Tales fan since 1998. Mm-hmm. The very first Tales game we got was actually 1999, about maybe 6 months after Tales of Destiny was initially released. I was at Walmart, found it for $20. I was, you know, that was during the period when JRPGs were the shit. Remember that period?
Sure, sure.
You know, when they were the, you know, the it game, the Call of Duties back then. And and I bought it, and I absolutely fell in love with it.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I've been a fan since. I have played, you know, I own every single US release of the Tales games,
mm-hmm.
you know, including Tales of the World, which is a spinoff, and you know, some of the rarer titles, but I own them all, and we've kind of gotten gypped, don't you agree?
I think so. I mean, I think that there have been a lot of games, like a lot of JRPGs that have come out in Japan that we never saw. I mean, okay, granted, a lot of those are kind of dating RPGs too and stuff, and some of those are kind of hit or miss over here. I think there's some that should have been ported here. I can't really name anyone specifically, but there's some that I can remember like wanting to be ported here. Like, for example, Mother 3. That's not a dating RPG, mind you, but Mother 3 is something that is still kind of sore in my heart and stuff, because I want that fucking game.
But yeah, I can understand that, because there, you know, there's a bunch of Tales games between, I believe, Tales of the Abyss and Vesperia that we didn't get.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's Tales of Innocence and, you know...
Yeah, you see, you're more familiar with, like, the Tales games than I am. Like, the very first experience that I had with the Tales series was, if I remember correctly, it was Tales of Destiny back in the PlayStation 1 era and stuff. And it was, like, a multi-disc game, right?
No, it's one disc.
Oh, okay.
It's actually in a multi-disc case, but that's because the instruction book's thick as fuck, which, you know, is rare today. Yeah. So, like I said, there's a bunch of games that we missed out. There's a bunch of spinoffs. Now, to be honest, some of the spinoffs we could do without, because there's like Tales of Versus and Tales of Heroes, and some of those are like, you know, Tales of Heroes is like a Dynasty Warriors game with Tales characters.
Right.
So stuff like that I don't care about. Tales of the World, I'm a little bit more keen on seeing, because Tales of the World is it's a Tales game. Like, it's got like a bunch of characters from different Tales games, and it's just a dungeon crawler. It's like the Tales, it's like a Tales, let's go, you know, all extravaganza adventure, you know?
Sure.
And those are pretty cool. We only got one of those. But you know, this is a good sign. This is a good sign that, you know, they finally have recognized that there's a fan base around the world other than in Japan for this series. So,
well, why do you think it took them this long to realize that there is a JRPG base here? I mean, if, you know, couldn't you just easily have taken a look at something like Final Fantasy 13 or even the previous Final Fantasies for that matter, and looked at the sales and kind of say like, yeah, we can sell to those people. You know, they're a pretty substantial bunch. They're not as many as Call of Duty, but it's still a pretty substantial bunch.
Well, there's a couple things. The Tales series is very, very anime-ish. So I think that might turn off some people. It is, and you know this, it's very anime-ish to the extreme.
Yeah.
So I think that turned off some people. Another reason is because sales factor into it. But you got to consider something. Vesperia did not sell well, okay? But I think sadly, no, yeah, and that's an amazing game, but here in the U.S. But you got to consider something, though. That game was on the 360. Mm-hmm. And we know how all those JRPGs that were released earlier this gen did on the 360. You know, Lost Odyssey.
Yeah. I mean, there's a lot of really good ones that came out there and stuff, like, that just didn't sell because it's the wrong audience.
Right. Now, Tales of Graces, which came out, and I understand sold better than Vesperia.
Mm-hmm.
It was on a Sony console, and that for JRPG fans, that makes a difference.
Mm-hmm.
Even Nintendo, to a lesser degree, a Nintendo console makes a difference for a JRPG fan. That, I'm not being console biased, but that does make a difference, because you associate the Sony brand with JRPG. And I think that's what happened.
I don't think that's necessarily the case. I think that it's a Japanese platform. And, you know, there's, you know, whether or not we have this sort of, you know, kind of affinity to it and stuff, there are some kind of titles that we feel belong to a specific platform. Like, we don't see, you know, because of how American the 360 is, we don't really see that as a JRPG platform at all. Even though, of course, it has, like, other games like Last Remnant and all these other, like, really cool games, JRPG games that came out of it. You know, it's still seen as the Call of Duty, the Halo console, the Gears console, and all that stuff.
Even Fable to a degree, so.
Right.
So, well, you know, it maybe that has to do with it, but I am glad that it is selling. You showed me an article today.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a very interesting article, and it was Hideo Baba, who is in charge of the Tales series.
Mm-hmm.
he basically said that he recognized there's a worldwide, you know, there's a worldwide fan base for this.
Right.
And he finally recognized that. And he did say he's not sure about bringing Innocence R, which is a port of Innocence, mm-hmm. to the United States or Europe because of the Vita audience in general.
I see. It was released for the Vita.
Yeah, yeah. It was released for the Vita. And that kind of makes me sad. But
yeah.
But you know what? I don't think that's a good excuse because you know why? Mm. They brought over Tales of the Abyss for 3DS. Well, no, it might be because Abyss was already translated and had voice acting. So
yeah.
So, you know. But still, if the 3DS has one, the Vita should have one too. And it's one that we never gotten, which is even better. So.
Well, I think that the reason why the 3DS got its own Tails game is because, and of course, ported over here, is because Nintendo made strides to save the 3DS from, you know, an abysmal failure. I mean, remember, like, it was like, it had a really high price point when they launched it. It was like likened to, and to me, I would liken it to when the iPhone 1, even though it was a critical success for like the Apple fans, started selling at about $500 or $600. Remember that?
Yeah, I remember that.
That was way too absurd of a price point for something like that. And then, of course, finally, they said, oh, we'll have like this program and stuff. I mean, granted, Nintendo is more generous with, you know, their ambassador program.
Oh,
I mean,
God, that was so fucking generous.
Yeah, the only thing that Apple gave us for that was like $50.
Oh, shit.
Yeah, you know what I mean? It's interesting because like they literally within like about a year, they turned around that awful launch of the 3DS and they signed up exclusives. And of course, you know, Nintendo knows that whoever holds the next Monster Hunter franchise basically controls portable gaming, which of course they pretty much nailed. And so that's why you see this confidence of Namco releasing Tales of the Abyss on, you know, the 3DS. And of course you see now that the Vita hasn't really, you know, kind of caught on with the same amount of popularity as the 3DS, and that future is still uncertain. So that's probably, yeah, that's the most likely reason why they haven't considered that.
Ah, well, you know, it's wishful thinking, but I do hope it happens that they bring in a Centaur, so...
Yeah. What else did they talk about in that article, though?
They made me jealous of Europe because Europe gets a nice box set of Graces.
Oh, and really?
Very nice box set with art. You know, it's kind of like the Witcher box set, the Dark Edition.
Mm-hmm.
It's a very nice box set, and I'm like, fuck you, man! I want that.
Why do they get that and we don't?
Because he said Europeans are more receptive towards the JRPG, which may be true, but...
Is that really true?
Okay, I don't know.
Okay, we have European listeners out there. If you think this is true and you have friends who are really into like JRPGs, or if you yourself is a big fan of JRPGs, write to us, partychat@gamerizon.com. Let us know if you really are strongly into JRPGs. Anybody in Europe, anybody who is like freaking east of the United States, email us.
And on that last note, too, I want to say, I want to hear, are shooters as popular in Europe as they are here in the States?
Yeah, we're curious about what genres are actually popular in Europe and stuff. Or, you know, even in Asia and stuff. Like, what kind of genres are popular there? Are JRPGs really popular in Japan or in Asia and stuff? Are JRPGs really, really that popular in Europe? Just like what this guy is saying. Again, email us at partychat@gamerize.com. We want to know.
And my last word on this is I will say JRPGs, like you have pointed out to me, mm-hmm. are more popular in the U.S. than people give them credit for.
Mm-hmm.
And with the sales of, you know, Graces and such, that proves it without a shadow of a doubt.
No, absolutely. I told you they were going to port it. They didn't want to steal the thunder from Ni No Kuni.
That's hey, next year we get Ni No Kuni and Tales of Zillia. Fuck yeah, Jesus. Baby.
Okay, so speaking of things that we're cheerful for and stuff, and things that we're really passionate about, there's one community out there that's really passionate about games, and that's the fighting game community. And this, you know, this past weekend and stuff, this, you know, the weekend after, you know, Independence Day weekend and stuff, the fighting game community held their annual Evolution fighting game tournaments in Las Vegas, which of course you're going to in the fall, but which, you know, they're not going to be there in the fall. But anyways, Did you check out any of the games at all, by the way? Like, you know, like, at all? Because there's a lot of games. It started on Friday and it ended on Sunday. And let me tell you, Sunday was pretty fucking crazy. So did you even catch any of, like, the grand finals, at least? Or have you watched any of the matches and stuff for, like, you know, for the tournaments? Because there's a lot of freaking matches. There's probably hundreds, if not thousands, of matches played this past weekend.
I watched some of the Soul Calibur 4 stuff after it happened. You know?
Mean 5?
Soul Calibur 5, my bad. I don't know why. And you know what's funny is that's one game I play a lot, and I played this weekend, in fact, was a lot of Soul Calibur 5.
Yeah?
Yeah, I love Soul Calibur 5. I love that game.
So what matches did you see? Did you see, like, any of the finals matches?
I don't know the dude's name, but I watched that guy with Terra.
Shining Decapon.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
That motherfucker just... He's like a lawnmower. He just mowed down the competition like none other. He just utterly devastated it. And what was cool about it, what's interesting about it is, you know, Terra is low tier. And she's not an easy character to use.
Yeah, because from what I got from the commentary, when she's in the gloomy stance, because she's a stance-based character, but she switches stances randomly. And when she's in the gloomy stance, there are some moves that actually damage her as well.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm not familiar with Tira anymore, because the last time I played Soul Calibur seriously was Part 3. But I'm looking at the list of finalists right now. There are about 4 people out of the top 8 that actually use Patroklos. Yeah. One of them used the alpha version of Patroklos. Shenchan, who is... Yeah, Shenchan, who is the second placer, used Cervantes. Something Unique, which is in third place, used Pyrrha. And then somebody used Mitsurugi in the top 8 and stuff. And yeah, Patroklos is kind of cheap, but somehow Tira still dominated. And by the way, the person who won this tournament did so by actually resetting the bracket. And what that means is he actually had to fight out of losers. Meaning he actually had to win 6 matches in order to win the grand finals.
Damn.
Yeah, he needed to win one set of, you know, 3, and then he needed to win the next set of 3 in order to actually win.
So from what I've understood, I could be wrong on this, is did Soul Calibur 5 really steal the show?
No, not necessarily, but the finals were, like, really exciting, because it was a character that everybody in the internet wrote off as, like, a low-tier character, and then all of a sudden, here's Shining Decapon completely owning people left and right with his Tira, which is just really so much powerful, and, you know, there are... And as I think it was Eris who pointed it out, that she had a super that did not scale. Oh. And that was actually really important. It was like a 21% damage super, I think.
You know,
and that killed people.
You know what's funny is I've been playing online ever since Evil happened. I've seen a lot more Terras.
Well, yeah.
Which is pretty interesting, because last week you hardly saw any.
Yeah, because everybody... I'm probably confusing the 21% one. I think I'm confusing that with King of Fighters, which we'll talk about this as well. But yeah, Tira is pretty damn powerful with the right person. And, you know, I'll echo what Eris said during, you know, his commentary. I'm really happy to find somebody who's playing a low-tier character and proving to everybody that... it's not really the character that matters, it's the way that you play that character that matters. And... the fact that Shining Decapon won Soul Calibur 5 is very important.
Right.
Yeah. And it made me a believer. And I don't even play the freaking game.
You've been very critical of the game, and I had to defend it from you a couple of times. So maybe someday if it price drops.
No. Not going to happen.
Okay. Anyway, what else happened at Evo?
Okay. So, you know, they had, you know, Arcade Edition, which, I don't know, like... what do you call this? Daigo didn't win, which was... I don't know. Daigo hasn't been at top condition for the past few EVOs and stuff, so it's not really surprising, I suppose. This guy who used Akuma, Infiltration was his tag name and stuff. He was the guy who won and stuff, and Daigo only won, like, you know, 5th place and stuff. But it was interesting that Akuma won. The last fight was fought against an Adon, which is another interesting choice.
Oh, shit.
Yeah, it was rather interesting. And then, you know, Daigo, you know, was underneath this guy who played Cammy, who, by the way, played a really good Cammy. There's some really good mix of different, you know, different countries here in this year's Evo. They had, like, Koreans, Japanese, there's Chinese, and there's, you know, and all that stuff, which is really great. But yeah, I can't really say much of Arcade Edition because I thought it was only okay. Ultimate Marvel vs. Capcom 3 was fantastic. It was won by Filipino Champ, which, of course, you know, he's Filipino, I'm Filipino. Let's get that shit out of the way. That's not how it works, people. I'm not just going to cheer for him because he's Filipino. But that was a very emotional fight. Like, that finals was probably one of the best finals I've ever seen in, you know, like, in this Evo, actually. It was really, really fucking
cool.
That's
a tall order.
Yeah, and, you know, it was okay last year and stuff, but, I mean, this year there was a lot more drama that's involved and stuff, because Filipino Champ's a, you know, shit talker. He's kind of like Eris, but he's kind of like a shit talker where everybody hates him and stuff, and everybody even was cheering for Infrit, who was basically his competition and stuff. And, you know, and it was a well-deserved win. I mean, he fought really hard. Like, after he won, he cried and stuff. But I would definitely check out that whole match, because I think, if I remember correctly, he also fought out of losers. And actually, now that I look at it, yeah, he fought out of losers. He basically won 6 matches to win the grand finals. So, because the finals match is basically like a best out of three. Or, no, best out of... Well, you need to win 3 times, basically. And then if you're from losers, you reset the bracket. And you know.
Fighting game community's got some controversial figures there, huh?
Yeah, well, they all do. Because they're mostly characters, really. That's what it is. And that's all I can really say about UMVC 3. Go check out that fight. It's really freaking badass. It's great. Mortal Kombat, Perfect Legend won again. That's really no surprise. I think Kung Lao, I still think that Kung Lao, even though they nerfed him, is still pretty overpowered, because he has that really strong dive kick that's basically like, you know, like, I think it's like only like a 1 frame of execution or something like that, so it's got priority over everything. You know, and hopefully, like, they won't make the same mistake as making another character that's like that. I mean, I heard Batman had a bat kick, which basically does the same thing, so that's gonna kind of suck. But yeah, Perfect Legend 1. Pig of the Hut, I've never heard of that guy until this year. He used Kenshi and Melina, and his Melina is okay. A lot of people think, you know, like, that he's kind of like the next Melina player. I personally play Melina, so I know what I'm talking about. He made a lot of risky teleport moves and a lot of ball moves, and as you know, with playing with some Melina people, that is the most punishable move in her arsenal, you know, if that's blocked.
Yeah.
And it's not the first time Perfect Legend fought Melina. I mean, come on. Okay. You know, Ryo last year basically fought him, and he actually did a much better job with that mind game of his.
Well, with Melina, with you being a Melina character and me being at the mercy of your Melina.
Yes.
Last year, I remember that. You know, who do you feel is currently maybe the best Melina player right now?
I still think Ryo has the best Melina. Because the thing is with Ryo's Melina is that he can actually stick to a ground game. And what by that I mean is he doesn't need to jump. He doesn't need to do the teleport. He doesn't need to do the ball. The ball and the teleports are part of his combos. The only thing that his Melina needs to do is to basically do a mix-up game, meaning, you know, force people to block either high or low and basically, like, have, you know, get them at his mercy. He does a much better job of doing that than Pig of the Hut did. No offense to Pig of the Hut, but I'm basing it off of how you played it, you know, at Evo and stuff. Maybe it's nerves, because Evo is sometimes about nerves, you know, and that's what I feel, what I observed from him, because he would do a lot of risky teleports, which were all punished, and you can't really do a risky teleport with Kung Lao, because he's gonna punish you big time with, like, a huge ass combo, and you're just gonna fucking die and eat it, you know, and forced to watch it.
And there's a lot of psychological mind games that go into Evo, I'm sure.
Not so much with Mortal Kombat. It's a lot of, it is a lot of mix-ups, you know? And I think that that's kind of the weakness that Pig of the Hut had, is that, you know, he just tried risky, you know, EX balls or regular balls, and, you know, instead of focusing on having, you know, like Kung Lao basically forced to block like a specific way. Because there was like one technique that Rio did, which is a back three and an into a ball when it hits, because you can hit confirm that, that he was able to do some massive damage with, and Pig of the Hut wasn't able to figure that out. And that was Perfect Legend's weakness last year. Again, I'm not too good with execution, but I can tell you that that's most likely, you know, what should have happened.
Right.
You know, so anyways, now I want to talk about the one game that really stole the show and the one game that really had a lot, the most drama out of all
the drama,
good drama. As in, like, there's actually a story behind it and stuff. And that is King of Fighters 13.
Okay.
That's very surprising, given that no one gave a shit about King of Fighters 13 because of its broken online. But, you know, the Koreans, the Chinese, the Japanese, you know, they had, like, this weird kind of, like, grudge match with each other and stuff. Because this was the world stage. This was the only way that they can actually show off what King of Fighters is all about. And I'm happy to say that the King of Fighters finals was probably one of the most exciting finals I've ever seen. Just right up there with Soul Calibur 5 and Ultimate Marvel vs. Capcom 3.
Damn.
Yeah, so you should definitely watch that. I mean, we're talking about characters that you're not even familiar with a lot of the time. And what that's one thing that's kind of interesting about the King of Fighters characters is that, you know, there's some of that influence in the way that they created the characters kind of overflowed into, like, Street Fighter Cross Tekken, which I'll talk about next, with the Tekken characters and, you know, some of the Street Fighter 4 characters. And, you know, King of Fighters 13 had a really good showing, and I'm really proud of those people. In fact, I would probably say that I'm proud of all the people who played in King of Fighters 13, because they really played their heart out, and it was really freaking exciting. It was really, really exciting.
So King of Fighters stole the show then?
Yeah. Now, I have to address Street Fighter Cross Tekken.
Oh, okay.
Which was actually one of the biggest disappointments of the show.
Oh, okay.
The way that they set it up is it's a 2-on-2 fighting game kind of setup. And Mike Ross and Combo Fiend got eliminated first, which because Combo Fiend was not tagging Mike Ross in. And I'm like, oh, okay, so much for teamwork for that team. You know, and Mike Ross was just kind of grinning the whole time. You should watch that because it was actually kind of hilarious. It was almost kind of like a Laurel Hardy sketch, almost in a way. You know, because it's like, what are you doing? Why aren't you tagging me in? Why aren't you doing this? You know, it's really weird. And I hope that next year, because I'm pretty sure Street Fighter Cross Tekken is going to be there next year because it has new characters. I am certainly hoping that next year it's going to be a one-on-one affair. This 2-on-2 bullshit is a joke.
Why did they set it up that way? That makes
no idea.
Because I'm not insulting the fighting game community, but they're not the most unified group out there. For that type.
Well, you know, the Asians were able to defeat everybody else, but, you know, they're Asians. They're, you know, they have no prejudices. But it's like, well, no, that's not true. No, but yeah, I don't know. It's really weird. It's a really weird choice. And since gems are probably going to be disabled again for next year, I just hope that next year it's going to be more of a one-on-one affair, because that's really the strength of that game. And this is a good experiment, I would say, but I would hope that there would be an actual full Street Fighter Cross Tekken 1 with one-on-one, where you can switch the characters and whatnot, you know, because I think that's more important.
Yeah, that was weird. That made no sense to me, but whatever.
Yeah. But in any case, like, all this information and stuff, we got this from shoryuken.com. They're the guys who organize EVO, you know, and they're part of, you know, the fighting game community a lot more than any of us will ever be. So thank you for, you know, for obviously covering that and organizing all this stuff. It's really fantastic that the fighting game community can rally behind an event much more so than all of the gaming community, for that matter, and actually sticking with a genre that you absolutely totally love. And that's, and people make fun of the fighting game community that they're chauvinists and all that stuff. But guess what? The fighting game community has more unity than any community in the gaming community, in the video game community combined. You know, that's all I can say about that. There's a lot of shit talkers in that community, but for the most part, they're the only ones that can truly say, hey, we have a venue we can call our own.
Yeah.
And we love that. So
gamers. But anyway,
yeah, so you have anything else to say before we move on?
Just real quick, how was the showing of Injustice real quick?
It was just like a 15-minute demo. It wasn't really much. It was the same stuff that they showed at E3. I think it was the E3 build, actually. And they had the same characters. And, you know, it was more conceptual, you know, because it was still in the alpha stage. But they just revealed today, you know, at, you know, San Diego Comic-Con, because it's starting tonight, that they have, I want to say, it was two characters. I think it was Cyborg as one of the playable characters and Nightwing.
Ooh, that is cool. I like Cyborg and Nightwing. Teen Titans, yeah. Actually. So yeah.
So I mean, you know, those are the two characters they unveiled, and it's actually a newer build than the one they showed at E3. So they're full force at San Diego Comic Con right now, and by the time you guys listen to this, Comic Con's already done. So
Injustice, real quick, is probably like up there with like Ni No Kuni and Tales of Zillia, is one of my most anticipated games of next year, along with of course BioShock and stuff like
Pretty
that.
Pretty tall so. Order, dude.
Yeah. I'm a DC fan, and that, you know.
I'll tell you this, I don't think it's going to make it to Evo next year, because based off of what I think the release schedule is going to be.
Probably fall or something.
I'm hoping May, but which would be too soon for Evo, but probably the year after it'll be at Evo. So
Sounds good.
So from that, we can segue onto our next topic. And I've actually been like watching a lot of kung fu films lately, and I think it all started when I started watching like Enter the Dragon, just for the hell of it. You know, I was having dinner one night, and I'm like, you know what? I'm gonna check out my Amazon Prime Instant Videos and stuff. And lo and behold, Enter the Dragon was there, and it made me remember how much I liked the storytelling on that. And yeah, you know, Bruce Lee kind of talks like Elmer Fudd, you know, when he says, "Hello, Mr. Waith." I'm like, "What? What? What did you say?" You know, "When I expand, I contract. And when I contract, I expand." I'm like, "Okay, dude." but the story holds up fairly well, even though, of course, some of the attire is pretty 70s based, you know. But I really, really liked it. So. And it kind of reminded me of how much I liked, you know, kung fu films in general. So what is your history with kung fu films?
Oh, I watch a lot of kind of the lesser known stuff. Not necessarily, you know, Jackie Chan's or your fucking, you know, Bruce Lee's or anything like that. I watch stuff like, one of my favorites is called Hell's Windstaff. And it's from 1979.
Jeez, okay.
And it's basically what it's about. And I love this movie. There's this warlord, and he has a weapon and a style called Hell's Windstaff.
Mm-hmm.
And his old rival comes around and teaches these two young men to use two different techniques.
Mm-hmm.
And the two techniques are called Dragon Hands and Rowing Oar.
Uh-huh.
And he trains these young men, and then, of course, a tragedy happens, and then it all leads up to a confrontation against the warlord and his Hell's Windstaff. And it's a little thin on plot.
Well, I would imagine.
Like, of course. But, yeah. but what's so amazing about this film is just the choreography and the fight sequences are just amongst the smoothest I've seen in any kung fu film.
Really?
Yeah, it just flows very well. There's, you know, scenes that aren't even fighting. Like, there's a scene where he's collecting chickens.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just done with so grace and shit. You know, yeah. It's a wonderful film, and I would recommend it to you.
So it's like Link.
Kind of, yeah.
Remember that part where he's like collecting chickens and shit?
And the chickens attack him, yeah.
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 Oh my gosh.
You need to watch it, though. I think you'd enjoy it. Again, it's thin on plot, but that's the point of a kung fu film. It's good.
So is that like your most favorite like kung fu movie of all time?
Yeah, it is, actually. Because wow. Because it's just so frenetic, and it's okay. Just so smooth. Mm-hmm. and a lot of the martial arts, like I love the wired stuff, don't get me wrong. Mm-hmm. Don't get me wrong, you know, like Iron Monkey and stuff like that. Is that the name?
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, stuff like that. I don't mind so much, you know, the wired stuff, but Hal's Windstaff, just it doesn't need any of that. It's just so raw.
Mm-hmm.
And it, you know, it's smoother than some of those wired film does. It doesn't need anything like that. That's why I like it so much.
Yeah, well, most of the stuff that I've watched recently, like, it's kind of a mixed bag. Like, it was like a couple of nights ago where I started watching The One with Jet Li. Have you seen that movie?
It's all right.
Oh, Jesus. Yeah, I did not like that movie at
It's all right.
Jet Li playing a bad guy is probably one of the worst ideas ever for, like, a bad guy. You know?
Yeah.
Because he always looks like a nice guy, even when he's evil.
Right.
You know, so it was difficult for me to kind of disattach myself from seeing that guy as Jet Li, because Jet Li was playing himself, and Jet Li is always a good guy, despite of what freaking weird, you know, dimension he was from, or universe he was from,
yeah,
or whatever.
Wasn't he like a time traveler or something?
Basically, like, it was like the Highlander, where this guy was basically killing all the iterations of himself from multiple dimensions and stuff, and when he kills them, he absorbs all their powers and stuff, and he wants to be the one, like, the one remaining guy out of all the dimensions of his iteration to have all the power.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's the Highlander, basically.
You know what? Go watch stuff like Once Upon a Time in China and stuff, his old stuff, and see Jet Li really in action in those films. You know, yeah. or you know what film was really good, and it is on Netflix, is Fearless. I really enjoyed Fearless.
Now, that's funny you mentioned that. I actually watched that the other day, and that would be the third time that I've watched that movie. I watched that movie twice when I was in college, and I watched it once just recently, and that's definitely one of my favorite Jet Li movies, and I want to get that on Blu-ray.
Yeah, it's a great film. Mm-hmm. And it's based off a true story, isn't it?
Well, it is based off of a true story, but with that said, not all the events of the movie are true. Like, he wasn't poisoned. He didn't die that way. He didn't die while he was fighting.
Romance with the blind girl or anything like that?
I don't know about that, because I actually didn't research about that at all. I just researched whether or not the whole last battle was true. You know, like, and I was like, and it just mentioned that he didn't die during, like, a match or something like that. He died of something else. I forgot, like, what it's called. But, yeah, I was like, no,
natural
there's no
causes.
Way. Yeah, I don't know if that's natural causes. I mean, it's on Wikipedia. You can research the real character's death and all that stuff. But, you know, he did found Wushu and stuff like that. And Wushu, in case people don't know, is the same martial art that Chun-Li uses. So, according to the Street Fighter II manual from the SNES days.
Oh, shit.
Yeah, I like the fights in Fearless. And I like that there's a progression to the character. Like, he was, like, arrogant in the beginning, and then he loses everything. And he kind of goes a little insane, and then he goes on a journey to discover himself. And I actually like those kinds of stories. Because, you know, it's something that is very true to everybody. Like, life will break you down and beat you in the head and stuff, and then all of a sudden you find your way back to who you were before, and you come out, like, stronger than ever. And I always like those kinds of stories, and a lot of kung fu films tell that story really well.
It's,
you know,
it's a good film. It really is.
Yeah.
So
I also watched Hero.
Hero's good.
Yeah, Hero is very interesting. That's another Jet Li film. I was on a Jet Li kick.
You know, so. You know what? You want to know something interesting? I went to go see Hero the night before I got married.
Wow, how romantic! Did you see it with your wife?
No. I went with friends.
Uh huh.
She was off wherever, you know. Mm-hmm. You know what the traditional wedding rules.
Sure.
So we went to go see that, and I remember just
wait. You did this as your bachelor party thing?
No. I did my bachelor party a week before. No, okay. it was the whole you cannot see the bride for 24 hours
sure,
or whatever
sure.
bullshit.
Yeah.
So, you know, we went to go see Fearless, and it was a lot of not Fearless Hero, and it was a fantastic film. I thought. Mm-hmm. I love the use of color in that film too.
Yes, it was. Would you think it's kind of like a Rashomon kind of deal where there's multiple stories being told and all that stuff, and you know, like trying to, it's almost investigative in its, you know, in its storytelling. Because one of the things that really made me interested in Asian cinema is just, well, other than Kung Fu, is actually Akira Kurosawa, because he's, I don't know if you're familiar with his work, but he's one of the, I consider, you know, him like one of the greatest directors of all time. You know, he directed some really great classics as, you know, Yojimbo and Seven Samurai. Seven Samurai is still one of my favorites.
And Ron. I think Ron,
you know, Rashomon. There's a lot of really good classics that he directed and stuff. And in a lot of ways, you know, like, I never thought about this too, but the way that he directs his films is very reminiscent of Westerns in a way. Like, you know, obviously Magnificent Seven, which is a Western, is basically Seven Samurai. And then there's several kind of parallels between his movies and other movies in Hollywood that are basically, you know, depictions of his stories in a more, you know, more Western environment. And I'm always interested in that.
And what a lot of people don't realize is, you know, other than just the adaptations of his films, a lot, you know, there's heavy influence. He's influenced, like, you know, Martin Scorsese and Spielberg and George Lucas. In fact, I believe, I don't know what film it was, but R2-D2 and C-3PO, you probably know this, are based off two characters in the Kurosawa film. Yeah. I forgot which film it was, but they're based off two of them.
Yeah, I faintly remember two characters. They're kind of acting like both of them and stuff. But yeah, I know exactly what you mean.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, there's those, and yeah, Hero is something that I need to rewatch. I mean, I said I recently watched it, but you know, my memory fails me. I actually haven't watched that thing since college as well. It's a much more controlled kind of story. It's not full on kung fu like Fearless. It's more, you know, it's more kind of like dramatic and more kind of like Rashomon, like I said. There's kung fu sequences, but it's not primarily that.
Right.
You know, it's very dramatic and stuff. Another film that I actually wanted to see recently that I haven't yet is Ong Bak. Have you seen that?
Ong Bak is, I've seen parts of it. I haven't seen all of it.
Okay. Because there's three movies for that already from what I saw.
My friends love the first one, but aren't too big on the second and third ones. So I don't know. But as far as films for me goes, I want to ask you, one of my favorite films, and this is the original one, is the original Drunken Master with Jackie Chan.
Oh, yeah.
Not the, like, the remake, 1994 remake with his family, and where he has a family and shit. Like, he's going with his mom and stuff. This, I'm talking about the old one where, like, his father dies and he gets trained and he matures through it.
Yeah.
Yeah, the original Drunken Master.
Yeah, I haven't seen that in a long time. I think I saw that in the Philippines, but I haven't seen it since.
Oh, I saw it not too long ago, and I still love that, the original one.
Mm-hmm.
I like it better than the newer one he made.
Really?
Yeah.
He made I remember he made a new one. In fact, he made a lot of iterations, like more current iterations of some of his old films, to kind of contemporize them. And it's funny because I had this kind of deja vu moment where I was seeing all these titles for his films and I'm like, didn't he make that before? You know, it's like, you know, the one where he basically fights as, you know, he cosplays as Chun-Li, and I'm like, what the fuck? Like,
yeah.
I remember all this stuff. Like, I'm not tripping out, am I, you know? So yeah, there's a lot of that. I mean, I don't know what other movies I should watch, like, as far as kung fu films.
Howl's Windstaff. You gotta check that out.
Which one?
Howl's Windstaff.
Okay, well, if that's on Netflix, I'll check it out.
Okay.
I like Fist of Legend, I'm sorry, because Fist of Fury is Bruce Lee. I actually really like that.
Ip Man,
I've watched both of those. Those are great. I love Donnie Yen. He's awesome. Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon, of course, there's that. Kiss of the Dragon, I've seen that. Yeah, so those are the ones that I've seen, but I wanted to know for our fans out there and for myself, like, what other movies, like, we should probably check out. And, you know, again, you can email us at partychat@gamerhorizon.com. We will be on the hunt for kung fu films to watch, because I'm a huge kung fu guy. Like, I really, really like kung fu movies and stuff, and I'm itching to watch one. Preferably, these movies should be on Netflix or Amazon Instant Prime, Instant Video Prime, whatever the hell they call it and stuff, so...
I don't know if Hell's When Steph is, but...
Ah, darn it. Yeah, there was like, other stuff, too. Like, you know, Sui Hark, I think, directed this one movie that I saw that I wanted to watch. It's not A Better Tomorrow. It was kind of like a fantasy film. I forgot what it's called, but, you know, I'll find it and stuff. The Legend of Zoo? I don't know. That's not it.
Kung Fu films are awesome, though.
Yeah, I like Kung Fu films. I really like Kung Fu films a lot. And at some point, I will watch Once Upon a Time in China. Last night, though, just to kind of leave you with this, I tried to watch Michelle Yeoh in this movie called Wang Chun. And okay. I was kind of making fun of it, because I'm like, Wang Chun? Isn't that like a fucking martial art in itself or something like that? Like, what the fuck? Why is it called Wang Chun? You know, it was like the most awkward kind of name ever, you know? So, but yeah, I was looking at it like on Wikipedia like yesterday, and I'm like, yeah, it's a Chinese based martial art, and it's somehow the name of this girl. And I'm like, okay, that's really confusing. But, you know, have you seen that movie?
No, I haven't. It sounds bizarre, though.
Yeah, it is really bizarre, because, you know, Michelle Yeoh is pretty much like a tomboy in that movie. And by the way, that was directed by Yuen Woo-ping, and he is responsible for the fight choreography for Fearless, the three Matrix movies, and Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon.
So he's the wire guy.
Yeah, I guess you can say he's a wire guy. I mean, he's not... I don't think he used a lot of wire stuff in Wang Chun, but... definitely Matrix. Oh, totally the Matrix. And absolutely, like, you know, Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon. That whole movie's all on wires.
Wires.
Wire foo, as Americans call it. So, but again, like, you know, if you guys have any suggestions, your favorite kung fu movies, we want to hear it. Partychat@gamerhorizon.com and stuff. And we will read them at the next episode. Speaking of Party Chat, it is time for our Party Chat segment of the week. This week, we only have one email, and this is by Laird Gamer and stuff. And the thing is, he posted a lot of questions. So are you ready for this, dude?
Yes, let's do it.
All right. He asks, does console/hardware hype exist anymore?
Yes, it does.
How can you say that?
Uh-oh.
What?
How can I say that?
Yeah.
You know, just fanboyism is the best hype you can get.
That's true, right?
So there you go.
End of story. And it says, no, people get excited, but it's there as much as anticipation as before. The internet has killed it for me, and it's quite sad. I don't know how the internet can kill hype. In fact, it encourages more hype.
I think it's just the negativity.
Well, pessimism in general, yeah.
You know, that a lot of gamers have.
Here's an answer. Hang out in more optimistic forums.
Oh, yeah.
I'm serious. I mean, that's all there is. It's a lot of pessimism. It's not healthy for you. Anyways, next question. Can a franchise make or break a game? By this, I mean, can branding make your standards higher or lower? For example, Metroid Other M was a good game, but it was only... was it a good Metroid game? I think that's what he's saying. And the answer is, I guess in his opinion, no. But on the other hand, Kirby Epic Yarn was a good game, but nobody said anything about it being a bad Kirby game. What do you think about this?
It depends. From what I understand, I've never played Other M. But from what I know about Other M, it kind of hurt what Metroid was about. And I can see that from what I know about Other M, because Metroid has always been about exploration, right?
Yes.
And, you know, there's a plot and you do care about Samus, but it's, you know, there's not cutscenes and, you know, over dramatic stuff. And I think that's what Other M tried to do, you know, try to make Metroid more dramatic. And let's be honest, Metroid does not need to be overly dramatic.
Yeah.
It doesn't need, you know, love interest or anything. It's about you going after space pirates, exploring an island, and the solitude and your exploration and your adventures tell the story. That's the type of game Metroid is.
Right.
So, you know, you gotta keep the integrity of that game series.
Mm-hmm.
And Epic Yarn, which I have played, I feel while it is, you know, Kirby's familiar powers are not there, it still keeps the integrity of what a Kirby game is.
Mm-hmm.
So there you go.
Yeah, well, for me, I think that, you know, there are certain expectations of a franchise. By locking your game under a specific franchise, you set a certain expectation of what that game should be. A good example of this was Silent Hill: The Room. Which is one of my actually not favorite Silent Hill games. It was a great idea, a great departure from a Silent Hill game, but the question remains, is it a Silent Hill game? And the answer to that is not really, because it's only after that they actually wrote the mythology into Silent Hill, which was actually pretty decent, I'll give you that. But it started off as not a Silent Hill game. It started off as a completely different series.
Right.
But they decided to make it part of the Silent Hill series. Now, it's debatable whether or not it hurt the series, but I think personally for me, it hurt more than it helped it.
Right.
You know, even though, of course, I like the idea, but concepts don't make a game. It's the execution.
Right.
So the next question is, innovation, is there too big of a risk? Can innovation exist in not quite AAA titles, but not the indie scene? That's kind of a weird question, because that means that can innovation exist between games that are not AAA and that are not indie, which I don't think a lot of that exists anymore. I think it's now either it's a AAA title or an indie title or a low-budget title, which not a lot of low-budget titles exist.
I just... innovation comes in any form. That's all I got to say on that.
Yeah, I think... I believe that, too. Innovation comes with... you know, with a lot of different things, by huge teams of people or small teams of people and stuff. And, you know, it takes more than one person, bottom line, to basically push an industry forward. And if anything, you know, like a good innovation that I think we're seeing a lot, which is positive, I think, is Black Ops 2 with its branching single player storyline. I really have to give them a lot of props on that and the way that they're executing that. And then, of course, indie games, they have a lot more smaller innovations there and stuff, but it scales based off of the, you know, the budget,
it's,
I guess.
Yeah, if you say innovation, I'll make this real quick, is, you know, you can say it innovates with maybe a new game mechanic or innovates a series, for example, like, you know, Castlevania Symphony of the Night innovated the series, and same with Lords of Shadow. So,
right.
So
right.
There you go. They're not original games, but they innovated that series. So,
or, you know, iterated upon it in a correct way, which is kind of part of like the previous question about the franchise thing. So,
yeah.
Last question. Do you like cheese? If so, what's your favorite? I like cheese. I like American cheddar.
Oh God. We have a cheese shop in my town.
Mm-hmm.
That my wife and I go to a lot, and the owners know us, and they let us have some 29-year-old cheddar.
Oh, wow.
That stuff was bomb.
Yeah, I like melted cheddar. So, like, basically, like, when I go to theme parks and stuff, I have to make sure that, you know, when they make, or, you know, burger places in general, I have to make sure it's that. Sometimes I'll, you know, play around with provolone and stuff like that, but it's either provolone or cheddar for me.
Oh, God. For me, it's... anything. I'm a cheese connoisseur. I'll eat any cheese. So
yeah. Bottom line, we are not lactose intolerant.
Right.
All right. Well, that about does it for all the emails, or email for that matter, for Party Chat. Remember, you can email us about anything we talked about today at partychat@gamerhorizon.com. You know, about Kung Fu films, you know, Metroid, Evo, and, you know, and of course the next episode, you know, it's going to be special because something big is coming out next week, or rather this week when you guys listen to it and stuff, that we've been waiting for a very long time. And the next episode is going to be all about that series. And of course, I think we're going to review Theorhythm then, right?
Yes,
the next
we are.
Episode. But next episode, in addition to that, it's all going to be about Batman.
Yes, and
look at Batman.
And I gave you some homework.
Yes, you gave me some homework. We will see if, you know, I manage to to do said homework. We are actually going to be talking about the two current games, and probably we're going to be talking about some of the older Batman titles and stuff, maybe going all the way back from the NES and stuff, if, you know, time allows. But we're going to be spending a lot of time on Batman, the video games, the comic books, and of course the movies. You know, whether we like them or not.
Here's the show: Batman, Batman, Final Fantasy, Batman, 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 Batman,
Batman, Batman, Final Fantasy, Batman, Batman, Batman.
There you go.
So, all right. So that said, that is our episode. Be sure to follow Anthony on his Twitter account at twitter.com/magusx1. He has a YouTube channel, folks, which he talks about a lot of different stuff, not just video games. Or actually, not, you don't talk about video games at all anymore on your channel, right?
Somewhat. I have a couple videos that maybe talk a little bit about video games. So
yeah. But for the most part, you know, all of his geek stuff is over there. It's youtube.com/magusx1. And you can find me, Alex, on twitter.com/eternityinblack, and of course you can follow our podcast at twitter.com/gamerhorizon, and of course please check out our website at gamerhorizon.com, where you can play all the previous episodes of our podcast, all 23 of them, all in one place. So until next episode, we'll see you guys later.